You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, if there was one TV phenomenon of the past year, then Normal People, the TV adaptation of Sally Rooney's book, was most definitely it. Before the first episode even aired, and before those famous calls to Liveline, or before Instagram knew anything about Connell's chain at all, I spoke at length to the director of Normal People, Lenny Abrahamson. Let's hear from Lenny now as he talks about the characters of Connell and Marianne.
Yeah, it's interesting because on the one hand, they have an incredibly open relationship, yeah. And what draws them to each other is the fact that they're both very bright. You know, they're different. He's from a single parent family, from a kind of working class family. She's from a wealthy professional family, but they both have their difficulties. And what's interesting about it is where they kind of meet each other is that they're both really bright and very sensitive and very insightful. And so they kind of recognize each other, even though they're from two very different worlds. And it's that kind of level of kind of honest communication, which is exciting for both of them. Having said that, once they're in each other's orbit, they're like in each phase of the relationship, something arises, and it usually relates to the kind of insecurities that each carries that gets between them and stops that flow of communication. So you're right. That is the pattern. It's like, and I suppose that's true of most of us, you know, you know, there are aspects of ourselves that we're not keen on, or we don't want to look too closely at. And in avoiding those things, it's usually that's usually the territory where relationships hit
sure.
Difficult.
But Lenny, like, is it fair to say that when you say that both of them are very bright, the difference is, especially in the sort of Sligo days before the Trinity College, is he openly bright and is one openly bright and she's secretly bright?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. He is popular. I mean, so it in terms of, you know, classic stories of teen romance, it nods to those while being something much more, right? And the nod is he's the, like, sporty.
He's popular.
Very good looking. He's popular. And he's clever, but he keeps it kind of like he doesn't sort of brag about it, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, and he defines himself as in the group. You know, that's where he belongs, in the group.
And she's aloof and she's odd.
Exactly. She's spiky. She's odd. She is not liked in school. She's very lippy with the teachers, but in a way which irritates the other students.
So if that leads us to some kind of power, are we constantly examining the power dynamics between them?
Absolutely right. So at the beginning of the novel and the beginning of the story, right, he has all the power.
Yeah.
So in the relationship, you know, they start to see each other, but the condition is that it's secret because he doesn't want to lose his status by being seen to be having a relationship with the girl that's not popular and that's kind of out of the group. And so he has that power, right? And she kind of, there's an aspect of this that she likes that kind of excites her, and it's part of the story as it develops. But then they go to university, and in university, she kind of finds her tribe, you know?
Of course, yeah.
She fits, she suddenly blossoms, she looks very different. She's got a lot of friends, and he, on the other hand, feels suddenly like a very small fish in a very big pond, having been, you know, the guy back home. And when they meet again in college, as they do, the roles are reversed. That the power is hers.
Yeah.
That she is kind of dangling.
And power is the thing here, because, like, is it a question sometimes of who is subservient to whom at what time? I mean, the nonchalant ways that people are cruel to each other, the things we keep from each other. Is he addicted to misery?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. I wouldn't say that he's addicted to misery. I think he's got this. I think what he has is something that I was interested in this and what Richard did a bit as well, which is being the popular kid is tricky, because if you don't kind of understand why you're popular, or if you yourself are not really internally that confident, you always have that terrible feeling that it's going to fall away, you know. So he has this, he's quite an anxious kid, and he's quite a complicated kid. And when he's, and when that takes over, he does stuff that he's not proud of, you know. He's not proud of how he treats her when they're in school. And yet, again, later on in the story, he finds himself unable to do what he knows he should do, and wrecks it again. But I think, but you're right that like in all relationships, the sense of status and power always plays a part. And I think it takes them the whole story to be able to just look at each other, recognize who they are, what they mean to each other, and talk honestly about who, you know, where they're going and what the story is. And in that sense, it's positive. It's a really positive story, because it does show how you can get passed by, you can overcome some of those kinds of difficulties and misunderstandings. And also, and I'd say this, the other thing that really drew me to it is just, for a lot of it anyway, it's such a kind of positive account of intimacy, you know, sexual intimacy and emotional intimacy. And we don't do that in Irish stories very often, you know, and this is a case where, okay, there are also complexities there, but generally it's a super positive, healthy kind of aspect to their relationship.
So therefore, just to stay with that for a second, I mean, she is like truly herself when she's with him, yet, you know, the one who makes all but one of the declarations of love, you know, he's the one who does most of that. But did they get to a point, what you're saying is, like, where they've kind of matured sufficiently to recognize and accept that they're at their best when they're together?
Yes, I think that's, yeah, exactly right. And also recognize what they've done for each other, because they've kind of, both each person has been incredibly important in the journey that the other one has gone on. And there's a recognition that that is valuable, even if it doesn't last forever. You know, we don't know at the end of the story whether it's going to continue or not. I think that's fair to say. But like, that doesn't make something a failure. I was always interested in that idea that, like, there's a great guy called Dan Savage who runs a podcast, Savage Lovecast. And he always says there's this idea that unless you actually die together, the relationship is a failure, you know. And that's a strange one, you know. But I look back certainly on some relationships I had which did not, you know, I'm not with the person anymore, but I think of it as a really good thing. And I think they recognize, they just grow in a way that allows them to look at who they are and what they've done for each other in a pretty mature way at the end.
Really, it's the dynamic between the two of them. So you've got to get yourself the right actors. Daisy Edgar-Jones and Paul Mescal. Are they any good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, of course I'm going to say they're good, but I wish there was a special code word I could use that proves, you know, that I'm not just being nice. They are amazing. They're just staggeringly good, you know, and it's incredible, like, what a number of amazing young actors are out there, because it's not just Daisy and Paul, but all of this huge number of young Irish actors around them who just are staggeringly comfortable on screen and great. But yeah, so Paul, this is his first screen role. You know, he was making a name for himself very much on stage in Dublin, just graduated from the Lear, and he'd been in Asking for It and Great Gatsby and all sorts of stuff. But this was his first time on screen, and he has it all. And honestly, the reaction to his performance from the States and everywhere where people have seen previews and various agents chasing him, and he's just an amazing actor. And
There must have been a lot of times on set where you have to go, hold on a second, like, you got that bit right, Paul, but actually what I'm looking for here, and you get so internal, it must be pretty difficult in some ways.
But that's the pleasure of it, really, you know, it is. And it's actually the way to think about it, I find anyway, is as a kind of collaboration with the actor. And even though in this case Paul and Daisy were young, they're both really bright, they're both very good, they have great instinct. So you're trying to, you know, if you have any sense as a director, you're using the instincts of the actor as well, and you're trying to find through them what the best way to play it is. But of course you'll come in and say, no, I think what's really going on is this, and then you'll have a conversation, and that's the pleasure of creating and working together. But I should say about Daisy as well, I mean, she's amazing. So she's British, but she's a, her mum's Irish, and so that helped a lot with accent, you know, and I think her accent is absolutely bang on. But the two of them together, there is that thing there, that spark or that chemistry that Joe would not live without.
And I presume in the Trinity College bits, are there normal students walking normally behind, normally not looking at any camera?
Yeah, we have like a coterie of background actors, extras, right? Quite often what you do, especially if you're on a big street or whatever and you can't close it down, you'll surround the actor with the people that you have.
Yeah.
Then you'll walk through the real world. And yeah, it's a funny thing. You know what? When I started this off making stuff like a long time ago, if you brought any sort of sizable camera onto the street, everybody wanted to look at it. Everybody wanted to know what you were doing. It was such a thing. People are so blasé about it now because everybody, you know, technology is everywhere. People shoot things on their, you know, people are recognized.
And that's so much better for you.
So much better for me.
I mean, now, if you could just stop the jets up in the sky making noise.
Listen, if you could get out and shoot now, it would be like the quietest.
That's what I was just thinking. Yeah, exactly.
It's an amazing zombie movie to be made.
Yeah, but there'd be no students in Trinity College in the background. No. You'd be relying on your extras and nothing else. Just as a matter of interest, the environment, you would say it is a specific setting for the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so like, the, you know, as somebody Irish and living here, it's nice to be able to do something here and film in places that I really love and everything. But the environment is very, yeah, there's the contrast between the city and the country, between the small town and Dublin, all very important. And I think the West, we shot the West really well. I think it feels contemporary. So it's nice because it's an international show. It's going out everywhere. It means that it shows Ireland in that kind of that non-cliched way.
Yeah, but like the actual subject matter, I mean, love across class, and we're talking here about class because his mum would be a cleaner in the house or would work in the house of her big house or whatever over in like the Sligo parts of the west of Ireland parts. And, you know, love across class, common thing. Emily Bronte, I could think of 1,000.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing, there are no new stories in that sense. And actually what's amazing, though, is that you can make it so particular, right?
Yeah, and, exactly.
Like, so we didn't change, there's no change to accent. We didn't sort of internationalize the vocabulary, and we weren't under any pressure to either, which was pretty amazing.
Is there a very thin line between being, I don't know, not voyeuristic and authentic, between tender and the right kind of glossy or whatever?
Yes, there is. And that was something we talked about. That was the biggest challenge of the whole thing. And that's something we talked about from the very beginning. How will we do the intimate scenes in a way that's true, but doesn't feel exploitative and is something that the actors feel positive about and it isn't uncomfortable, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, we spent a lot of time thinking about that. And for me, it's just this, Dave. It's like sex is a big part of everybody's life, whether it's whether they're in a sexually active relationship or not, right? Mm-hmm. It's a big part of human beings, and yet we don't talk very well about it. It's either kind of comedy or it's super glossy or it's pornographic, you know what I mean? And what all we wanted to do was to say, this is the truth of this aspect and this central aspect of the character's relationship, and to try and do that with honesty and clarity and genuineness, and most importantly of all, it's not like and to make it continuous with the rest of the stuff. So like there's in episode 2, they have sex for the first time, and so what was really important to me was that we tell that story from when she arrives at his place and they sit down and start talking, and we don't suddenly cut to the sex scene. We tell the sex scene as a continuation of all the communication that's happening before.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think because of that, nothing is gratuitous. It's always telling you something about how they're feeling about each other, what the status of their relationship is. And it's also a celebration of how wonderful, in a non sort of, you know, schoolboy way that stuff is. Like, we should be able to celebrate it.
Yeah.
Because it's a huge part of people's lives.
Are they surrounded by what I would call, you know, normal and pretty obvious, but the wrong people?
Well, that's interesting. I think what's good about the way Sally did it was that by the time Conal and Marianne return in a later phase of the story to Sligo, you can feel that the whole group has matured. And there's a kind of recognition among particularly Conal's friends that they were like dicks to Marianne, you know, that was not a good thing. There's a lovely bit where Conal realizes that for all his obsessive keeping of this relationship secret, in the end, everybody kind of knew it was happening and nobody really cared. So I suppose what it tells you is you're a fool if you choose to act in a way which is supposed to please other people and not yourself.
Exactly. That's Lenny Abrahamson there on the making of the runaway TV success that was Normal People.
You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.